The opinions and commentary expressed in the following presentation do not reflect the views of this station, the Economic Club of Indiana, or the Economic Club's agents or sponsors. Support for the Economic Club of Indiana is provided by the Lumina Foundation, with a goal to increase the percentage of Americans with high-quality degrees and credentials to 60% by the year 2025, focused on ensuring an accessible, responsive, and accountable higher education system.
Welcome to the Economic Club of Indiana. Today's presentation is from Jennifer Vey of Brookings Institute and Betsy McCaw with CICP and 16 Tech.
Pleased to welcome you back to the Economic Club today. I'm David Johnson, President and CEO of the Central Indiana Corporate Partnership and of CICP's Life Sciences Initiative BioCrossroads. And this year I have the terrific privilege of also serving as the President of the Economic Club of Indiana. For many of you, maybe even for most of you, this will be a new topic. We're about to hear about something that has been in the making, though, both across the country and right here in Central Indiana for a number of years. It's a movement that, once underway, can make an enormous difference for cities on the rise like Indianapolis. Downtown areas and cities like ours are experiencing resurgence, as everybody here knows very well. For many good reasons, downtowns are on the map, not only as great places to live and work and play, but now increasingly to invent, to collaborate, and to build new places and new things. And that's all occurring as part of a larger trend that's going on probably not only in the United States, but really around the world, focusing more and more today on cities and metropolitan regions as the real drivers of the economy, far more than the federal government from a jobs standpoint, and even more than state government from a jobs and innovation standpoint. It's really at the metropolitan region where things increasingly are taking place. Jennifer Vey, our first guest and speaker today from Brookings, has been, as I mentioned in my opening comments, responsible for helping to define, along with her colleague Bruce Katz and others at Brookings, the language of what we're talking about here in terms of innovation districts, advanced industries, iterative innovation, a number of the things that really need to come together in the kinds of strategies we're going to talk about today, and things that actually can come together in dense urban areas like ours. As a fellow and a co-director of the BASS Initiative on Innovation and Placemaking at Brookings, Jennifer utilizes innovation economics to enhance competitiveness and quality of life of older industrial cities and metro areas through technology, and she will show you in just a moment what that means. Her work focuses primarily on the factors that drive competitiveness and the quality of life in cities and metro areas in the innovation economy. Signature opportunities of place, like the innovation districts that you'll hear more about in a moment. These are designed to be dense and busy, resulting in highly vibrant collaborative environments across people, organizations, ideas, and places. And it's not just a national conversation for us, because here in Indianapolis, just along Indiana Avenue between 10th and 16th Streets, we are about to have our own innovation district at 16 Tech as a planned innovation community. You may not have heard much about it until now, because it has been a project in the making, but it will soon be the largest talent, attraction, retention, and development place to be in the city's history. Late in 2015, thanks in very large measure to the hard work and the passion of our other guest speaker here today, Betsy McCaw, the Indianapolis City County Council caught the vision and the excitement for 16 Tech, and with strong support, absolutely essential strong support from the surrounding neighborhoods, authorized a bond issue of $75 million, really a precedential bond issue, with a unanimous vote at the City County Council to provide the extensive site work and bridge across Fall Creek that have always been essential to enable the 16 Tech site, and they've eluded that until now. Like any other innovation community, 16 Tech will be a place where people not only work, but live and play and learn, collaborate and invent. It will be anchored by the exciting permanent facilities for the Indiana Biosciences Research Institute. It will include a broad range of software startups, IT companies, biotechs, and other key technology companies. 16 Tech will be the place to be, where innovative drivers for all of our region's advanced industries in life sciences, in tech, in energy, in ag tech, advanced manufacturing, literally and truly can come together productively to do new things. And they will do that in ways that are inclusive, that are part of the community from which this project comes. and to draw upon and work with the ambitions and the energies of the community leaders in the city of Indianapolis that have made this project possible. CICP has been privileged to be involved. We're an advanced industries organization, and we've been privileged to be involved in helping 16 Tech get started. And again, that's been a whole lot more sensible for us because we already had someone in Betsy with the talent, the experience, the communication skills, and the vision for the project who brought the project together, as you will hear, and who will pick up the story, Innovation District story from Jennifer today, and bring it home to what it's going to mean for us here in Indianapolis to have an Innovation District. So to get this started, please join me in welcoming Jennifer Vey, who will then introduce Betsy McCaw as our program gets underway. Thank you.
Thanks so much, David, and thank you all for coming here today. Again, I was here in Indianapolis maybe 18 months ago, so it's I'm really glad to be back to such a big audience, and as I understand it, an audience that really brings together so many different sectors of the Indianapolis economy, which is very exciting to see. So I'm going to, there we go, and so I can see my slides here. So as David said, what I'm really going to do is talk about the work that we've been doing at Brookings over the last several years that really focuses on the innovation economy, where it's been, where it's going, and really how the innovation economy is connecting to inclusion and particularly to quality places driven by particular trends. So first, you know, let's look a little bit about the trends that are driving cities. And you know, what we've been talking about at Brookings is this is really a city-driven century. And it's a time when cities, urban areas, are really leading the way, both in this country and certainly globally, to grapple with a lot of our deepest challenges, but also taking advantage of a lot of the opportunities. So 3 million people globally move to cities every single week, which is a pretty substantial number. And it's in these cities where you see a lot of the dynamic economic activity happening. So cities are, for one thing, where growth and productivity agglomerate and concentrate. It's certainly where you're seeing a strong opportunity, economic opportunity function, and I'll talk a little bit about this in the context of the innovation economy. But really, people are moving to cities, whether here or whether they're moving to them, certainly around the world, to really take advantage of the jobs and the economic opportunities that lie there within. Diversity and democracy. Cities are really places where we all come together. It's where you see that diversity of people, the diversity of ideas, and really where you see democracy in action in terms of people really engaging as citizens in their communities. And then finally, cities can really be hotbeds of sustainable development. They're the places where innovation occur, and it's certainly the place where we're seeing a lot of experimentation when it comes to environmental issues and sustainability, in large part because you have a dense concentration of people, you have opportunities to be experimenting along the lines of transit, more walkability, experimenting in building design to really create more sustainable communities that hopefully will outlast all of us. But at the heart of it, urbanization really is concentration. If you look at the top 300 metros in this country in terms of their share of global totals, they're 20% of population, but 47% of GDP. And you can look at this across a number of incomes and jobs, and basically what it means is while you see growing populations in these places, what you're really seeing is the concentration of economic activity. So when you pair this city-driven century and then you pair it with the innovation economy, this is where you're really seeing a lot of dynamic things happen. So for one thing, the global economy is increasingly being driven by innovation. I don't think, you know, everybody here recognizes that, certainly in your own lives and in your own work. And what's really important to think about from the economic context is how innovation really drives economic development. So, for example, this happens to be a list of platform technologies that McKinsey has identified that they think are really going to drive global development in the years to come. In fact, that are really going to be about half of GDP, possibly within the next decade. And there are things that range from the mobile internet to automation to genomics, you know, how we manage our own health, to 3D printing, to renewable energy. These are the kind of things that are going to infuse our economy. They're going to be ubiquitous within our economy, and they're going to ripple out through all other sectors to drive growth and to drive productivity. In terms of who's going to capture that growth, we know that it'll be predominantly in cities and their metro areas for all the reasons that I cited earlier. So when you ask yourself then, well, which cities are going to really play in terms of the innovation economy moving forward? We don't fully know. I mean, we can look in the past and say, what were the big cities that grew up under the economy of the past and the innovation of economy of the past? So why did Detroit grow? It was because of autos and because of innovation in industrial processes, right? Look at how Silicon Valley grew, starting with semiconductors. We know then that in this economy, it'll be those regions that have stellar research institutions, places that are doing that kind of advanced research that undergirds innovation. It'll be a bigger ecosystem of firms, big firms, small firms, the startups, and the intermediaries that glue them together. It'll be collaborative networks. Any place that's really going to have a strong innovation economy needs to have a collaboration of different sectors of the economy and different people, and I'll talk a little bit more about that in a second. Goes without saying, they'll need a concentration of talented and increasingly diverse workers, because we know that the innovation economy will demand a diversity of perspectives and ideas. Capital, you need money. And quality places where all these things start to mix and collide with one another. So that brings me to this nexus between the city-driven century and what we're seeing in terms of the innovation economy. A new urban paradigm. And this is really the work that we've been doing at Brookings under the auspices of the BASS Initiative on Innovation and Placemaking, working in partnership with a group called Project for Public Spaces out of New York. And what this really means is, and what we're still trying to really tease out, is what really is this nexus between innovation, place, and inclusion? We know they're tightly bound, and we know that they're driving our innovation ecosystem, but what does that really mean? So I'm going to sort of preview the work that we've been doing and where we're seeing it happen on the ground. So what is this new urban paradigm where these two things come together? Well, on one hand, innovation processes increasingly demand collaboration, as I noted. So by collaboration, this means that the innovation economy itself, as opposed to even the middle part of the last century, is increasingly open and increasingly collaborative. So that means that large companies want to be near small startup firms to see what's going on and to adopt a lot of those technologies. They want to be near major anchor institutions where a lot of the research is happening. Anchor institutions themselves are beginning to commercialize more off their research, and hence they want to be part of that startup ecosystem and be spinning off that activity. You need that entrepreneurial ecosystem. And you need things like medical centers that are all, you know, where a lot of this is agglomerating. And this is different than what we saw in the past, where in the middle part of the last century, you know, the innovation economy was much more closed, and that had spatial implications as well. So at the same time you have a more open and collaborative innovation economy, this is playing out then where companies then are wanting to move to be near other firms and talented people to take advantage of that collaborative kind of atmosphere. This just happens to be an example from Fairfield, Connecticut, of GE moving from the suburbs to be right within the innovation district in the Boston Seaport. And there's example after example where we're seeing this kind of movement happening on the landscape. At the same time, it comes down to the people and the workers. People are increasingly demanding great places to live, to work, to play. You're seeing this here in Indianapolis. We're seeing it in cities and regions all over the country where demographics and choices are driving more people to want to be in more walkable, transit-oriented, amenity-rich kind of areas. So these things together, a shift in the innovation economy itself to be more open and collaborative, a shift in what workers want in terms of where they want to live and work, is actually changing the scale of how then we think about place. So if you think about place and how that relates to the economy, supplier networks are, you know, basically you have greater than 100 miles, right? If you're thinking about how goods move across the landscape, it's a pretty wide geography. You shrink that down to how labor moves around the landscape, and that's really at about the 40-mile radius. It's actually how we define metropolitan areas. It's where people are commuting to and from to get to their jobs. But when it comes to knowledge sharing, that's actually happening at a much smaller scale. Some research indicates it's really happening at even less than a square mile because people want to be bumping into each other to be able to have that kind of knowledge exchange. So what does this all add up to is that the hyperlocal, not just cities, but actually enclaves within cities, are becoming increasingly valued. So that's happening in what we refer to as innovation districts, which are really more at the advanced end of the economy. Your more advanced sectors, whether it's in life sciences or material sciences or high-end energy functions, where you're seeing those research-intensive anchor institutions combining with hospital systems and large and small firms growing up in these innovative enclaves that have a lot of innovation capacity, but also are strong places as well in terms of the kind of cultural amenities and physical atmosphere that they have that promotes that kind of collaboration. But we're also seeing it happening in other types of communities as well, or other types of innovation enclaves as well. So, for example, in some places, it's more your creative and tech hubs. Maybe they're not at the highest end of the advanced economy, but there are other kind of innovative activities that we're seeing starting to agglomerate, where maybe you're seeing tech activity that's growing up in certain sectors of the economy, you know, creative sectors of the economy, really, you know, with maker spaces that are growing up right next to them and seeing that kind of concentration of activity happening in certain enclaves of urban areas. And then even things like food markets, where you're seeing, you know, a different kind of innovation around, say, food and entrepreneurship and giving people entry into those kind of markets. And, you know, we could go on to say, you know, but the point really is that you're seeing this kind of innovative activity that's really concentrating in different parts of the city, and these hubs play different types of roles in their economy and connect to each other in new and different ways. So what does this all mean is, you know, it's these areas that are coming together where you're seeing the learning happening, the colliding, the testing, the caffeinating in terms of place, socializing, meeting, the kind of programmatic overlays that's bringing people together to really bring this diversity of innovation assets, the place assets, and then the networking piece. The kind of spaces that bring people together and the kind of activities that bring people together happening in these in certain destinations within certain enclaves of urban and even increasingly suburban areas. So at the same time as all this activity is happening, it's really opening up new opportunities as well. So this comes to the sort of the inclusion part of this tripartite equation between innovation, place, and inclusion. What we're also finding is as you're seeing these economies grow up in urban areas, it expands the opportunity trajectory for a few reasons. On one hand, it's about jobs because many of these innovative sectors where they have a strong multiplier effect and that these are really the centers of job growth and will continue to be the center of job growth for their cities and for their regions. At the same time, though, as a lot of this activity is starting to concentrate in more urbanized areas, it's actually nestled right next to or often nestled right next to or even within lower-income communities. So if you think about the fact that a lot of our innovative economy was growing up in science parks that were 30 miles outside the city or on a highway corridor somewhere, and you know, you can think Research Triangle Park or even how Silicon Valley developed, this parallel model where you're seeing this really starting to happen more in urban areas opens up more opportunity to connect people because it's a lot easier to connect people that are perhaps a few blocks away or even, you know, located elsewhere in your city than when it's happening 40 miles outside in a suburban area. And what we know is that a lot of the jobs that exist don't necessarily require a four-year degree. What we found in some work that we did in Philadelphia is that 57% of the jobs in the district actually don't require a bachelor's or higher. So the idea here, though, is the opportunity is there, and we need to get much more aggressive about how we actually connect people to those opportunities via things like workforce programming, business development opportunities, and the placemaking that makes people feel part of these developments as they're growing. So where is all this happening? Well, you know, how is it showing up on the physical landscape? And I'll just run through a bunch of examples here that we're seeing, you know, and how it's shaping up in kind of different ways across the landscape. So corporate research centers locating near top engineering school. Atlanta, Georgia is a great example. You have Georgia Tech there, and increasingly some of the research functions of companies like Panasonic, like NCR, have actually been moving into the district to take advantage of Georgia Tech and its talent. A dense concentration of anchor assets located right next to a downtown. Example from Philadelphia in their University City District. They have Penn, Drexel, Children's Hospital of Philadelphia, major anchor institutions that are all located, co-located, pretty much right next door to each other in this very growing area, and it's right next door to the downtown. And increasingly, you're seeing actually the center city, the downtown of Philly, and University City starting to merge together to create this very dynamic kind of innovation hub. An anchor-based medical district growing next to a commercial quarter. We're doing some work in Oklahoma City where their health center, which is located in the city, pretty proximate to their downtown and some other interesting and dynamic commercial areas, but has been pretty much a very suburban-style health center campus and research campus located within an urban area. And they're looking at how they can both reinvigorate this campus, bring more life to it, bring more activities and the kind of physical spaces and programming that brings people together to really ramp up their innovation economy. At the same time, how they can create better connections to some of these surrounding, commercial hotspots that are located right there but actually feel quite far away just given the physical geography of the place. An entrepreneurial district that's spearheaded, interestingly, by a public utility in Chattanooga, Tennessee. They have a downtown that's been growing, and they've been doing a lot of reinvestment for quite some time. They have the gig that was actually, it's through their public utility that they have high-speed internet, and they're really trying to capitalize that to create an innovation district within their downtown area. And finally, an example of a legacy downtown in Detroit, a downtown that had for a long time seen some better days, that's actually being reimagined as a cluster, as an area of entrepreneurship, driven in part by Dan Gilbert and Quicken Loans and all the activity that spun off of that in terms of the tech community. And I think if you look over the past 10 years, you've seen a lot of dynamic activity happening in downtown Detroit. And then finally, coming back to sort of my map with the circles, it's happening in these other kind of enclaves as well. Nerd Street in Philadelphia, which is really a quarter right within the city of a lot of tech entrepreneurs. Pike's Place Market, big public marketplace that's really spurring entrepreneurship in Seattle, or someplace like Station North in Baltimore, which is where I live, which is really an example of an arts district where you're seeing a lot of interesting creative and tech activity, a large maker space going in, a new film school, some gaming companies that are all starting to agglomerate in an area right near the train station that for a long time had its own struggles, but now is starting to see some real invigoration with a lot of these new activities. Okay, so what does all this mean in terms of a place and what they actually do about any of this? So we're seeing a lot of this happen organically because it's being driven by the innovation trends, by the demographic trends and choices that I talked about earlier. But how can you take a lot of these trends and really put them on steroids and say, how in a city do you really leverage the assets that you have in new ways to not just continue to let it happen as it happens, but really think more strategically about how to build on the assets that you have? So one, the key starting point is really creating that network of leaders, institutions, firms, and intermediaries. So, this often doesn't really happen fully by accident. You have this organic activity, but if you want to really capitalize and leverage it, it really means forming new coalitions of people to really strategize, like you've done here with IBRI and BioCrossroads here in Indiana, to really get strategic about how you're bringing the corporate sector, anchor institutions, the civic sector together to really double down on some key bets and make those, set some clear goals and really make some investments to really build on the things that you already are good at, but to move them forward. It's about auditing your assets to really determine where you are. It's hard to know where you're going if you don't know what your starting point is. So we've been really trying to develop and test a framework around how do you really assess what you've got? How do you understand what your critical mass of assets are? How do you know what your strategic and competitive position is in terms of the kind of innovative activity you have? What are your research strengths? Where are you falling down? Where are you underperforming in terms of the strengths that you have? What are your place assets? What are your weaknesses? How collaborative are you, and how do you create new structures? So it's really about doing that kind of baseline assessment to understand where you are, what your strengths are, what your weaknesses are, and how you overcome the challenges and really seize on the opportunities. It's developing game-changing strategies that then build on the assets. So this comes back to getting creative and thinking a little bit differently, maybe than you had been in the past. One example is this idea of what we call the unanchoring of anchors. You know, where you might have anchor institutions that, you know, they might be staying put wherever they are, but saying, you know what, we also need to have a presence over here where the innovation economy is really growing. So this just happens to be an example. I don't know why it's getting cut off a little bit here, but in Mission Bay in San Francisco, where you have major new medical center and the University of San Francisco locating part of their campus in Mission Bay, there are examples all over the place. In Baltimore, a great example of how a piece of the lab tech program for biotechnology that's out of a community college that's located, you know, in one part of Baltimore, actually moved to be right within the University of Maryland Baltimore Biopark, so that now students can actually see what's happening in the buildings, get internships, and really connect to that economy from the beginning. So it's just, you know, thinking differently about how the location of assets and getting and being more thoughtful about and strategic about it. Establishing the city itself as a testbed of new technology. So how can the city get smarter with what they do with their own assets, their own policies, their own regulatory structures, and being open to innovation happening? Pittsburgh's a great example. They have certainly a strong innovation platform coming out of Pitt and CMU in automated intelligence, and hence Google moved there, right? They wanted to be close to the action. They wanted to be close to that expertise. But beyond just having the company from kind of a research and technology standpoint moving there, they're also able to use the city, because of the openness of the city and the mayor, to being able to use the city as a test bed to actually test out the driverless Uber vehicles. So how can cities just, you know, be more open to the innovation economy and supportive of it? Creating an environment that supports entrepreneurship, this kind of, again, keep getting cut off. It wasn't cut off, I promise, on my home computer. Creating an environment that really supports entrepreneurship. This just happens to be one example. There are many from Durham, the American Underground, which is a co-working space, an accelerator kind of space that really helps companies start and companies grow. Intentionally linking residents and businesses to the economy. I talked a little bit about this earlier, but this is how you really start to get a lot more aggressive about tying particularly low-income residents into the growth that's happening. Even when you're having growth, it's absolutely a prerequisite. It doesn't necessarily trickle down or down to the benefit of all citizens. So how are you thinking more about these workforce programs, procurement if you're a major institution or corporation? Who are you buying from? How can you support local businesses? Okay. And then how can you create places that feel more inclusive? This happens to be an example out of Philadelphia of the West Philly Skills Initiative, which is really a place-based effort to link low-income West Philadelphia residents to anchor institutions, where particularly in occupations where those anchors were seeing a lot of job turnover, and they're tightly working with those institutions to create workforce programs that both work for the institutions but certainly work for the residents. And then last but not least, before I hand it back off to Betsy, it's repurposing and remaking underutilized land and buildings. So I put an example here from Baltimore. This is of an area called Port Covington. It's on Baltimore's other major harbor, where Under Armour is moving its existing campus over a period of time to this area that is a little bit of a blank slate. There's not a whole heck of a lot going on there now, a few buildings, a little bit of this, a little bit of that, but they're taking over this space on this waterfront to, over about a 25, 30-year build-out, not just build a big new Under Armour campus, but also new housing, new amenities, a hotel complex, parks, recreational opportunities. Truly almost a little mini city within the city that's located also right on the I-95 corridor. So, you know, something that really has the potential to be a game changer for Baltimore. But I could have just as well put up a project like 16 Tech up here, doing much the same thing. And without further ado, I'm going to pass it on to Betsy.
Thank you, Jennifer. Thank you, David, for the kind introduction. And thank you, Jennifer, for all the work that Brookings Institution is doing to help us define what's happening in Indianapolis today and helping us also to compare what we're doing to ensure we're competitive with other major metros, not just in the United States, but around the world. I have the distinct honor and pleasure to stand before you today to tell you about how we are making it happen in Indianapolis. And this is a big, bold, ambitious project. not unlike what we've done before in Indianapolis over the last 40 years. Today in this room, there are people that have made these big, bold, ambitious projects happen in Indianapolis and put us on the map around the country and around the world. This is not unlike that, but it is also, frankly, bolder because it has to do with all of you and all of the industries, organizations, academic institutions, philanthropic organizations of which you are a part. We need you to make this happen, to put us on that next step, that next pedestal, to be a global hub of innovation, not just one in the Midwest, not just one in the United States, a global hub of innovation and human impact. That is what we're aiming for with 16 Tech, and that is what we can and we know we can make happen. So without further ado, I will talk to you about what 16 Tech will be. It will be a world-class innovation community, much like what Jennifer has discussed is happening around the country and around the world. What she didn't talk about is what's happening in Amsterdam, what's happening in London, what's happening in places in Asia. This is what's also happening in here. And it's necessary. It is necessary to become a global talent attraction mechanism. And that's what 16 Tech really will be. It will be a hub for multi-sector innovation and entrepreneurship. It will create pipelines into the industries that exist today. Our organization, the Central Indiana Corporate Partnership, was formed a little under 20 years ago to ensure a platform for growth and economic prosperity for the organizations and the talent that exists here and create attraction for more so that this really does become that kind of hub. This is really one of those climactic events that we can all grab a hold of and make happen. And it happens because we have amazing research institutions. It happens because we have incredible innovative companies today. And we've done a lot of the work that Jennifer has described. But we've got a couple hitches we've got to work out to make sure that we put ourselves on this pedestal as a global place of innovation. And so as we move forward, we have to think a little bit about our history. We were built on innovation, going back over 150 years. Eli Lilly, Cummins, you name it, James Allison and Allison Transmission, Madam C.J. Walker, right on Indiana Avenue, right where 16 Tech is going to be placed. Fast forward a century to Exact Target becoming the Salesforce Marketing Cloud and the primary real estate in our city becoming the Salesforce Tower this month and next month. Pretty impressive how technology has driven our economy, how innovation has driven our economy. But as you look at this, you notice that there are people that are a part of this. There are people behind every ounce of this innovation, and talent is really the key, and Jennifer mentioned this. So we have done a lot of research to understand not only this asset base in Indianapolis, Central Indiana, and the state, but also the talent dynamics. And the Brookings Institution has done an incredible amount of work and included Indianapolis in this work as well as Indiana. And so I didn't include in this the Indiana pieces of this puzzle, but if you take a look at advanced industries, which are really the drivers of the overall economy today, and Jennifer put up 12 different platforms of technologies and advanced industries really powering those. And those are the industries much like your own that involve a greater amount of R&D spend and a higher degree of STEM-based workforce. We have that in droves in our region. And that's what's creating the innovation, the prosperity that we have today, among many other things. Indianapolis, 1 in 10 jobs are in advanced industries. The salary associated with those, the pay is almost double the average pay in Indianapolis today. A pretty important statistic if you're looking to drive your economy and your tax base, which we are here in the region. Almost a quarter of the output is there. But that's actually one of the hitches in our economy. If you look at this, in our research, we said, you know, we've got an amazing base of assets to build from. And as Jennifer said, you've got to find what these game-changing strategies are to build on your strengths. Well, this is one of them, because we've got two problems we need to solve that came out of this research. The first one's in the corner of this, and that's the output. We have a great deal of growth in our jobs, and we have a great intensity of jobs in these advanced industries that are driving innovation and economic prosperity. Our output is not actually keeping up with the growth in the jobs or even with the national average in output for advanced industries in metropolitan areas. That's a problem, because that output is what drives our long-term economy. So what do we need to do around that output, and why is that not happening? And the research has come back, and the reason is because we're not actually collaborating across industry. We do an amazing job inside our own silos in our industries, but we are not doing as much as we could to bring technology to bear as the enabling technology within each of these industries and pushing them together, creating that place of collision. 16 Tech is that place. 16 Tech solves that problem. It is a place of collision, is a physical representation of ways that you can get together with other smart people, other collaborators, innovators. Whether you move your R&D operation there or you leave it where it's at, you know where you can go to find like-minded people to collaborate, build technologies that will create value for your organizations and for the region as a whole. The second thing that we discovered in all of this was taking a look at the underlying talent dynamics. As I said, people are behind every one of these innovations. You yourselves are innovators in your own organizations. That is what drives the economy. That is not, actually, I'm pushing the wrong button. There we go. We, Indianapolis, our region, is lagging in two regards. And we're not lagging just the coast. We're not lagging Boston, New York, San Francisco. We're lagging Pittsburgh. We're lagging St. Louis. We're lagging places that we would say are the places we should compare to. I say we compare ourselves to the coast, but we've got a long way to go. We are not growing our talent base in advanced industries and advanced degrees, whether it's, frankly, the folks that are coming out of high school that can walk right into one of these jobs or the PhDs. We are not growing that talent base fast enough. Not only are we not attracting it, we aren't retaining it. This is actually, to me, one of the scariest slides, and I don't know if you can see the numbers well enough. But in the time between 2009 and 2013, Indianapolis lost over 5,000 people with advanced degrees. Look at Denver. Denver gained almost 18,000. People, if we're talking about a pipeline for innovation and the growth of our economy, that is a massive swing in a generator of innovation. We have great institutions here. We have great academic institutions right here in our city with IUPUI and a multiple number of others. We have great institutions around the state. We have great companies, but we're not holding on to the talent and we're not bringing enough here to keep that going and to compete at a national and global scale as we really want to. The ambition of all of the people in this room to make this our home base and grow this home base the way we know we can. So this was the other hitch in that research, and this is another one that 16 Tech addresses. We create a place that is a global talent magnet. And as Jennifer said, it creates a diversity of jobs. It's not just a life sciences park, even though our anchor is the amazing institution of the Indiana Biosciences Research Institute. It is an aggregation of the innovation happening across sectors because this is where it collides. This is where people say, you know what, I see one opportunity because we're in a mobile workforce. People move for opportunity. But they don't just move for the first one. They move because they want to be part of something. They move from Germany, as the chief scientific officer of the Indiana Biosciences Research is in the process of doing this week, to arrive here on site, hopefully next week, to help lead that institution into the forefront of research in life sciences in ways, in discovery-level research, that we have not yet seen here in Indianapolis and in our region. It is designed to attract over 200 people from around the world. This is no longer a field of dreams. We have it. It's happening. Reiner Fisher is coming here. So this is what we're doing. This is the kind of talent, and it is a combination of things happening at Ascend with developing that workforce pipeline. It is a combination of the innovative research that's happening in your organizations and the university at IUPUI, who is the neighboring institution of 16 Tech. So where are we? 16 Tech is 1 mile from here. It is part of the center city. It is in this beautiful little enclave right at the nexus of the White River and Fall Creek. Surrounded by trails, surrounded by water, the former headquarters of the water company. It's a really interesting area, surrounded by diverse, culturally rich, historical communities that we've brought along with us, because the city, the state, and that community are a part of this with us. If we can do what we think can happen at 16 Tech, the community's got to come with us. This is about lifting everybody and making our home this testbed for innovation, as Jennifer mentioned, of creating these game-changing strategies and putting them in place at 16 Tech and connecting them out to the institutions in this room and in the region and in the state. It is a place that we will create a support system for entrepreneurs, co-working space, makerspace, that active, dense, live, work, play, learn, urban environment with great coffee shops so that you can get caffeinated while you're talking to the person and colliding with the arts and culture that we want to be a part of this. This will be about community inclusivity. This is a strategy for all of the Indianapolis region. This is a strategy for the state. This is to help us become a global magnet for talent. And it is happening today. And so my charge to each and every one of you in this room is to become a part of it. What kind of value can your organization drive by being a part of 16 Tech? What can you as an individual drive? Is there something that you've got a curiosity? Is there something you want to make happen? Somebody will be able to work with you at 16 Tech over time. That's what we're going to make happen. And I hope that each one of you can walk out of here today and think, all right, how do I get engaged? You will start to see activity happen on site at 16 Tech in the coming months. Groundbreaking coming up pretty quickly, and events coming with that. And those are the kinds of events that will bring folks like you back together to talk about new innovative technologies and the way that we move Indianapolis forward and place ourselves on the map of globally relevant innovation centers. So with that, we are going to open it up to Q&A that I think David is going to drive for. But who knows if there's enough time, so feel free
we'll
to contact John, who he mentioned earlier. John Kish is running this great endeavor right now, and an incredible board who has been amazingly supportive in getting this underway with the city of Indianapolis and the state of Indiana at the helm. So thank you very much.
All right. Told you it'd be some big ideas here. Thank you both. That was really terrific. And as obviously these are big concepts that take some time to unpack, Jennifer, I've got a question for you as someone who has worked, and your examples are really helpful here, but as someone who's worked in communities all over the country, and I imagine you've heard this in some other places, and it goes as follows. We are overly modest. We don't really believe that we can get this done. We think that cool things like what Betsy's talking about happen every day if you're in San Francisco or Cambridge, Massachusetts, but they don't happen nearly as often if you're in Baltimore or Oklahoma City or Indianapolis. And as I think Betsy's comments get us to, you gotta have belief in this to get people really excited about it to work. How do you do that? How do you address that in the communities that you guys are working? Because I know you've come across it.
Yep. And I mean, in some ways, the answer is obvious. Probably is it really takes leadership, and I think really unpacking what does that mean. You know, to have a visionary leader. But in the places that we're seeing this happen, it's usually one person or one organization that's really stepping out to say, we know that we can do this. We see what the vision is, and we're willing to make it happen. Because I think what happens in the communities where it doesn't is there's a lot of great initiatives, there's a lot of great activities that are going on. As you said, you have, you know, things happening within individual silos and individual institutions. But if you don't have someone or some organization that's coming out and seeing what the potential is and how you can reach it if you create more collaborative structures and that you really place some big bets and go all in. And I think that winds up making places a little bit tepid too. It makes you nervous to go all in. If you don't really believe you can get there, then it's a lot easier to keep up with the status quo, or, you know, have a little investment here and a little hedge your bets, right? Mm-hmm. But the problem with hedging bets is it's, you know, while there's safety in that, it doesn't necessarily get you to the big, bold, you know, ideas that are really going to change your metropolitan area. And the fact of the matter is, even outside of your Bostons and your San Franciscos, as you well know here, there's a lot of strength. I mean, there's a lot of great anchor institutions, research happening. You certainly have great corporate partnerships. Plus, you have a lot of great cities, you know, that have great bones that people, you know, that the talent wants to be in. And it's coming out on all front to create those kind of atmospherics, but also figuring out, you know, what are the key strengths and what do we have in this area that gives us an edge that other places don't? You know, not every place can be a life science center, even though a lot over the years have tried. Not every place, you know, can excel in every technology. It's a matter of really figuring out, what do you have that that can really put you at the forefront or at the vanguard of some of these technologies? And then, again, having that leadership and that vision to really bring people together to move it forward.
And so part of that really comes in taking a pretty honest look at what you have where you can go with it.
Yeah, too. Because fad chasing, you know, rarely works, you know, as we know. So it's you know, really comes back to really understanding what you have that you can build on.
Right.
And being realistic about it while being realistic while being bold at the same time.
So Betsy, a question for you. And that is how do the people who do not have college degrees and have not had a background in advanced industries, who may live in the surrounding areas or want to come there, what's in it? What's in 16 Tech, and what's in a placemaking strategy for for the people who are not necessarily at wearing white lab coats and involved in advanced industries.
Sure, absolutely. And as you can imagine, we talked to a number of community residents. In fact, the hardest meeting that I had was my first one in the community right when we were starting this process, because we were getting a lot of these questions from the folks that are just adjacent to 16 Tech and didn't want us to come in and run over their neighborhood, but really wanted opportunity. And we did it two different ways. One, the research tells us, and it's happening in other innovation districts, it really is a diverse mix of jobs, from low-skill, mid-skill to high-skill. So it's not just the folks in the white lab coats. It's creating a pathway up and through to that, perhaps. But it's also how do you create opportunity for folks that don't have it today. And so we've done a couple of things. One, we've worked with the city to make sure that while it's getting built, we are employing minorities and others, that we want to make sure this is a very diverse community that's a part of this from the very beginning. But two, there's a community investment fund that is created as a part of 16 Tech, so that 10 cents per square foot of all the rents on an annual basis will go into a community investment fund, and that will be specifically used to drive education and opportunity, really those pathways in the surrounding communities for education associated with the advanced industries careers. Does that mean the folks are going to get a job in 16 Tech? Maybe, maybe not. But they will get a job based on the kinds of industries that will be present, the technologies that will be present in 16 Tech. And that was our commitment to the community right from the start. And they have been incredible partners with us, working very closely with John and Laura and others throughout this process, because it's both important to them and to us. And connecting them, frankly, to other opportunities in education here within the city as well.
And I think your answer largely covers this, but the questioner also expressly said, what are the gentrification issues that 16 Tech is dealing with?
The question, actually, more so than anything else. So 16 Tech actually does not encroach on any residential property. It's actually quite far from it. And a woman walked into a community meeting with a picture of 16 Tech and said, so I was looking for my house and when you were going to bulldoze over it. We are not. Our intent is to take over this older industrial ground that is sitting there, largely vacant and unused. Some of it actually is being used for administration for IU, that they've been kind enough to work with us on how we can transition that land as part of the district. But we will not be touching on any residential property now. As people move into this district, as they move into 16 Tech and they want to live, work, and play there, we will build our own housing, and that will be market rate housing. But then we're working with the community on other strategies. They themselves are working on their own housing strategies today. They were far ahead of this because they know where they are in the city and they want to improve their communities. But they also want to make sure that their community members are taken care of in that process. So it will be a continual conversation with the community. And one that we're aware of and want to make sure we're in partnership with them on.
Jennifer, this questioner, there's a question via Twitter, always interesting questions. How small can you go in thinking about innovation districts and innovation strategies for communities? This questioner is saying, what about a 25,000 or 35,000 suburban area or metropolitan
sure.
area? Is there a scale below which you yep. can't go to have these kinds of thoughts?
You know, it's an interesting question. We've actually thought a fair bit about this in terms of what is really the definition of an innovation district. And the fact of the matter is, there's no sort of point in time where, outside of the few places that actually, designated officially an innovation district, sometimes because they had the assets and sometimes because they were kind of putting a label on something, it's really a trajectory, right? I mean, there's no one point in time where you say, well, now it's here. You're building it out over time, and it's really saying what is the asset base you have to work with. So I think in smaller communities, most smaller communities don't have, the same concentration of assets or the same level of assets naturally as a bigger urban area. Having said that, even smaller mid-sized places may have some expertise, whether they have it's coming off of a smaller liberal arts college, or whether or not they have some expertise in the ag sector, or through serendipity they have a company that grew up there over time because it was a hometown company that has remained and continues to evolve, and it gives you something to build off of. So I think it's will an innovation district in a town of 20,000 play the same role in the global economy as what 16 Tech might play? Probably not. Does that mean that they can't themselves be thinking a little bit differently about how they spur innovation by understanding what their assets are, by understanding their placemaking strategies and saying, you know what, we have an opportunity to do something different. Maybe we do have a university that's located 50 miles away that, you know, may have some, there may be a value proposition for them to open up, you know, a piece of their campus here. How do we build on that? You know, we've been looking to expand our hospital for, you know, 20 years, and we were thinking about, you know, expanding it in place, but, you know, why don't we think differently about how that expansion happens and how we grow off of it? So I think there's still opportunities for any place to just be recognizing what are the trends that are driving the innovation economy and maybe thinking more strategically about what that can mean for their own community.
What are the trends and what do you really have to bring to it?
Absolutely.
That's right. Well, unfortunately, we're out of time. Please join me again in thanking our terrific speakers. This will be a continuing conversation, and again, we hope to be able to show you some terrific progress here in a very short period of time. Thanks for coming. Have a great afternoon. See you next month.
You've been listening to a speech from the Economic Club. This episode concludes radio presentations for the 2016-2017 Economic Club of Indiana Speaker Series. Join us in the fall for the next season. You can find more information at economicclubofindiana.com. The Economic Club of Indiana is a production of WFYI Public Media in Indianapolis for Indiana Public Broadcasting Stations.